Good morning. It's KKRN Radio. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to KKRN Radio and Off the Shelf with Mary, and I'm your host, Dr. Mary Mitchell. I'll be sharing some of my favorite old and new nonfiction books about philosophy, spiritual psychology, science, metaphysics. Some of these may offer just the knowledge you've been looking for to enhance your life. The two books I'll highlight today focus on finding balance and peace. If you're a Star Wars fan like I am, I think you'll enjoy the first book, which is The Jedi Mind: Secrets from the Force for Balance and Peace. It was written by Amy Ratcliffe and published in 2020. The second book, Man's Search for Meaning, was written in 1963 by Dr. Viktor Frankl. So who was Amy Ratcliffe? In the introduction, Amy writes that she used to be a worrier, dwelling on the past and wondering about the future. She had a lot in common with C-3PO in Star Wars, trying to manage her anxious tendencies. In the book, she shares the wisdom of many Star Wars characters, since each one contributed to her success in finding balance and peace by using mindfulness practices based on the Jedi Code. The Jedi Code is this: there is no emotion, there is peace. There is no ignorance, there is knowledge. There is no passion, there is security. There is no chaos, there is harmony. There is no death, there is the Force. All Jedi strive to follow these principles for being at peace, but they aren't just for a galaxy far, far away, but they're here for us in our own lives. Yoda begins by sharing how important it is in starting over to find balance and peace. He says, "You must unlearn what you have learned." That's what I love so much about Yoda. He gets right to the point, doesn't he? While Luke has preconceived ideas about how the galaxy works, Yoda advises Luke to clear his mind and trust the Force. Because our minds are constantly measuring everything against how we think things ought to be. Yoda cautions Luke that having preconceived ideas can block him from absorbing new information. Luke soon learns that the Force is not a power that you have. It's not about lifting rocks. It's the energy between all things, the tension, the balance that binds the universe together. And at the same time, mindfulness is about paying greater attention to what's going on around us and immersing ourselves in a task. Anakin Skywalker asks us to always put purpose ahead of our feelings. Yes, the Jedi Code holds that peace comes within an absence of emotion, since extreme emotions can lead us into the dark side. The Jedi approach is to plan any problem with the intent rather than heated emotion. Whatever dilemma we may anticipate, it's important to begin with a clear intention. An intention on how and what we feel, how we want to feel, and let it guide us to where we want to be. In this way, our intention develops into an attitude that carries us forward. Yoda offers this advice: do or do not. There is no try. It's funny how often I reflect on this advice. I always have a list of projects on my to-do list, and in the morning I prioritize which ones to spend my time on during the day. Sometimes I think I'll make progress on this one today, and immediately I hear Yoda reminding me, try, do not try, do or do not. Oh yeah, either do it or do not. No halfway effort today. It's likely I won't get the whole project done anyway, but what progress I do make will be done with my full attention and intention. This applies not only to projects, it applies to self-care, doing what I need in order to be at peace in everything I do today. The Jedi remind us that our focus determines our reality. When we approach any activity with a quiet mind, it'll play an important role in how my day unfolds. If any thoughts appear tempting us to think something negative, just let them go like leaves flowing down a river. Stay focused and let them go by. When Obi-Wan first met Luke, he shared this definition of the Force. The Force is what gives a Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you, here, between you and me, the rock, the tree, everywhere. Yes. Yes, when we lose sight of the bigger picture of this energy field, we can shift that by grounding ourselves in nature, bathe ourselves in a forest, or even a park or our backyard. Even for a brief time, nature can serve to center us, reminding us of the connection between all living things. Motivation is another important energy used by the Jedi. Motivation is often stimulated by an affirmation, a tool to encourage positive thinking, such as, I am one with the Force. The Force is with me. It can provide inspiration and counteract any negative thoughts that may trickle in. I encourage you to try it. Identify a goal you want to achieve, and then write a positive affirmation in the present tense that supports this goal. Write it as if something you're doing in the moment is so important it is happening now. For example, the books chosen and presented in this program have a positive influence in the lives of all listeners. Over time, our subconscious mind accepts this as part of our identity, part of our experience. When Luke meets Rey Skywalker, he helps her to feel the Force within, in and around her, by having her sit quietly, close her eyes, and reach out with her feelings while breathing mindfully. In the movie, we watch as she gains a connection to the energy field and begins to understand and feel the balance of the Force. This is a powerful tool anytime we're in a stressful situation, as we hear Luke say to Rey, breathe, just breathe. Along the way, we meet Qigong Jinn, a Jedi that understands the value of all life. Qigong is a perfect example of patience and compassion, always offering an act of kindness to all. Even in a brief exchange, he expresses loving kindness, and it always has an impact on people. And while we're doing it, any negative thinking drops away. Our dear Yoda shares that it is a lifelong challenge not to bend fear into anger. Yes, even Yoda, the Jedi Master, shares that he was consumed by fear during the Clone Wars. He cautions that those who wield the Force must be especially cautious of fear, which can lead to the path of anger and the dark side. So often anger is an explosive emotion that hits quickly and then our mind reacts, throwing fuel onto the fire. But Yoda knows that with mindfulness, anger is only an energy that comes and goes. We can let it in and then say goodbye without inviting it to stick around. Developing and trusting our powers of perception is another practice. By trusting what we see, smell, hear, it helps build trust in ourselves. Attentiveness is something we can practice anytime we speak to someone else. You may notice that even when we're talking to someone, our brain is chattering in the background. And that background noise can be silenced if we're focused on our friend and being fully present. Perhaps you remember when young Anakin was preparing to ignite the engine on his pod racer at the start of a very dangerous race. Jedi Master Qigong cautioned him to be present in every moment, because the slightest distraction could lead to a fiery crash. He said, remember, concentrate on the moment. Feel, don't think. Use your instincts. It's good advice for all of us, isn't it? When we're in the present moment, we're savoring the feelings of what we're doing and thinking. We listen to the sounds around us. We feel the temperature of the air. We see the reflections of sunlight around us, and we smile. Here we are. And it is good. At one point, the Jedi Council invites Qigong to join the council, but he declines since he felt the council's decision were not in alignment with his goals, and he wanted to continue to be focused on his work. Obi-Wan Kenobi agreed with his decision and said, "If this is the path you're called to, then this is the path you must follow." Yes, it's important to listen to our heart and never be afraid of who we are, to recognize our place in the world and the joy of following our own path. When a Jedi Knight was blinded in a battle in a fit of anger, he went to see the Master, who said that there was a power in acceptance, and that power existed in him. Instead of investing energy in conditions he could not change, he advised the Knight to strive to accept the condition and practice self-acceptance in order to find peace. In an epic lightsaber battle above the ocean, at one point, Ben Solo, who was caught up in the dark side, thought, "I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it." And just then, he saw the image of his father, Han, our hero. Ben remembers the last disastrous meeting with his father, but this time he uses all the strength he can muster to acknowledge Han as his father. And then he intentionally pushed himself away from the dark side. He threw his lightsaber into the ocean waves and headed to the light. When I feel challenged, I remember something a wise Swami once said. "You can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf." Life brings us an unending cycle of waves, and I like that visual. The key to staying on the surface is to learn to surf. And to surf well, I know I have to be strong. There was a time when Obi-Wan's mind always seemed to be looking ahead, since Yoda had advised him to be mindful of the future. But Obi-Wan's master, Qigong, could see that his focus was creating unnecessary anxiety about the future, and advised him not to look at the future at the expense of the present moment. Keep your concentration here, where it belongs. This is good advice for us today. Modern life is full of things that beep and buzz and distract us from the here and now. We might find some relief and actually a pleasant experience to spend part of our day without such interruptions. In one movie during Rey's travels, she opens a door to self-discovery. The energy of the Force reaches out to her and draws her to a castle where she finds the Skywalker lightsaber. As she touches it, she has a vision that this is a strength for her. It's a strength within her. And for me, like Rey, I realize there is a light always present within. We all have this inner strength, although sometimes the light may be dim, but it's the light of the Force that we can focus on and use its brilliance as a tool for action. You know, the Jedi have a sensory sensitivity, but as Obi-Wan trained Luke, he reminded him to avoid solely relying on sight. He said, "Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them." He implies that our eyes can send the mind incomplete or even incorrect information. He tells Luke, "Be aware of everything, even if you can't see it." I sure understand this, since often I may not see, but I can feel it or smell it, I don't know. And actually, when I'm in nature, I can close my eyes and have a new reference about my environment. You, too, can visualize a tall evergreen tree and its rich scent, and if you're out camping, hearing the sparks of a campfire and feeling its warmth. These kind of visualizations, even for a few minutes, help us to unwind. In one particular scene, when a prince was despondent about something he couldn't change, the master advised patience. I don't know about you, but I find the pattern of hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, is just an inescapable part of my life. But it's a perfect opportunity to be the observer of what's going on around me in the present moment. Even when I'm stopped at a red light, I often find myself humming or saying something positive to myself, or I'm patting my steering wheel going, "Good, reliable truck." Recognizing that I cannot hold on to that present moment, so why not, when I'm in it, paying attention to it, use it for some good in my life? I close out with the highlights of this delightful book with the words of Yoda. You will know when you are calm, at peace. It's passive. It's in that quiet space that we have the clarity to see different perspectives. So Amy Radcliffe, thank you so much for pulling together the wisdom of the Jedi to find peace and balance within ourselves. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and a team of volunteers who keep it all organized and running really well, as well as all the many programmers who spend hours each week to produce something for your listening pleasure. You're invited to support this amazing team by sending a donation to KKRN, P.O. Box 188, Round Mountain, California, 96805, or look for the donate button on the website. We also love donations of cars, trucks, boats, motorcycles through the website careasy.org. And if you have any questions, be sure and give us a call, 1-855-500-7433. The second book I chose offers a unique perspective in finding balance and peace, and the title is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. So who was Viktor Frankl? He was Jewish and a professor of psychiatry and neurology at the University of Vienna during World War II. And during the war, he spent 3 years in Auschwitz and other Nazi concentration camps. During that time, he learned that almost his entire family had been wiped out. As a psychiatrist who lost his family and every possession, everything he valued was destroyed. He suffered from hunger, cold, and brutality. And every day, he expected he would be killed. And every day, he pondered, how can I find life worth preserving? He believed that the will to live under such harsh circumstances can't easily be found without grasping for a larger purpose for this senseless suffering. He named it existentialism. To survive is to find meaning in the suffering. If there is a purpose at all in life, there must be a purpose in suffering and dying, but each person must find out for themselves. Nietzsche said, he who has a why to live can be with almost any how. He who has a why to live can beat it with almost any how. In the concentration camps, everything familiar was snatched away, and what remained was what he called the last of human freedoms, the ability to choose one's attitude in a given set of circumstances. Dr. Frankl pondered, how can one awaken in a prisoner the feeling that he's responsible to live for something, however grim his circumstances? For some perspective on the life in these concentration camps, Dr. Frankl was in one train of 1,500 people, and 80 people were in each coach, and the individual people were carefully accounted for by the capos. The trip lasted for several days and nights, and they were so crammed in the coach, all they had was the space to lie on top of their luggage. Everyone expected the train was headed for some munitions factory where they would be used as forced labor. But as the train neared the main station, they saw the sign, Auschwitz. The name stood for all that was horrible, gas chambers, crematoriums, massacres. As the daylight came, they saw long stretches of buildings surrounded by barbed wire, fences, watchtowers, searchlights, and hundreds of ragged human figures walking the roads to do some sort of work for the day. Outside the train, these men and women were moved into a shed built to accommodate 200 at the most. They were given 1 5-ounce piece of bread, their only food in 4 days. Ordered to leave their luggage behind, they were separated to groups of who was fit and who was sick. Those who were sick or couldn't work were sent off. But in the end, about 90% of his group was marched from the station straight to a crematorium, which had the word bath written on the door in several languages. He and the rest, who were fit, were moved to a building where anything valuable was taken away, and then they had a real bath of disinfectant. Oddly enough, a strange sensation seized Dr. Frankel, and it was curiosity. Curiosity as to whether he would come out of this alive or as a cripple. The first night in Auschwitz, they slept in tiered beds about 6.5 to 8 feet long, and that slept 9 men directly on the boards. It was a bitterly cold time of year, and only 2 blankets were given for the 9 men. So they laid on their sides, crowded and huddled against each other for warmth. The next morning, a man smuggled himself into their hut. He wanted to calm and comfort them, and he shared how to avoid the gas chambers. He said, shave every day, even if you have to find a piece of broken glass or trade your last piece of bread for a piece of glass. Do it, because it will make you look younger and fit for work. And then when you stand, stand up straight, and when you walk, walk smartly. The first phase in this mental adjustment was first the shock of being in the camp, and as that wore down, the prisoners passed into the second phase, relative apathy, a kind of emotional death, longing for home and family. For days, they were unable to wash or clean their teeth, and they ended up, looking back, having to wear the same shirts for 6 months of the year. And Dr. Frankel was reminded of Dostoevsky's state that a man can get used to anything, but do not ask how. When Dr. Frankel was transferred by train to Dachau, another train of 2,000 prisoners, when they passed through Vienna, there was a little peephole, and he wanted to see the street he used to live on. He was surprised that he had no emotion looking at the houses of his childhood, as if he was looking with the eyes of a dead man. In spite of the physical and mental primitiveness of camp life, it was possible for some to experience a deeper spiritual life, and those who did seemed to suffer less. The intensification of an inner life helped the prisoner find a refuge from the emptiness, the desolation, the poverty of their existence. It let the prisoner escape into the past. Frankel would find himself imagining past events, both trivial and unimportant. In his mind, he took bus rides. He unlocked the front door of his apartment. He answered the phone. He turned on the lights. One early morning on a frozen winter day, Frankel thought of his wife, her image, her voice. And for the first time, he saw the truth that is set into a song by many poets. It's the truth that love is the ultimate and highest goal to which one can aspire. He understood how a man who has nothing left can, for a brief moment, contemplate his beloved. At times of utter desperation, in this loving contemplation of the image of his beloved, he could find peace. A thought crossed Frankel's mind. He didn't even know if his wife was still alive. He only knew one thing well by now, that love goes very far beyond the physical person of the beloved. It finds its deepest meaning in his spiritual meaning, his inner love, his inner life, his inner self. Whether or not he actually would be present or still alive at the end of all this seemed to be unimportant. Whether his wife was alive or not, it could not touch the strength of his love, for love is as strong as death. The prisoners also found themselves in utter fascination with nature. On the journey to Auschwitz, from Auschwitz to a Bavarian camp, they could peek through the holes in the car and see a glowing sunset on the mountains of Salzburg. And he looked around at the awe on so many of the prisoners' faces. No one would have believed that those were the faces of men who had given up all hope and all liberty. Long after Dr. Frankel's release from camp, when he resumed a normal life, someone showed him a photo in a newspaper, and it was of prisoners lying crowded on their bunks, staring dully at a visitor who walked into the room. The person said, "Isn't this dreadful? It's horrible. Look at those staring faces." He didn't understand. And a moment later, Franco saw it all over again in his mind. He remembered. It was 5 a.m., and he was part of the 70 men laying on hard boards in an earthen hut. They were all sick, and for 2 days, they didn't have to leave camp for work. They could lay there all day and wait for their daily distribution of bread and watered-down soup. And he remembered how content they were, happy in spite of everything. Finally, Dr. Franco was invited to help with some medical issues in another building, but he was so weak that the copco who requested his assistance wondered if he'd have another corpse on his hands by the time they got there. But Franco felt compelled to save his own self-respect, since he had been feeling that his existence had descended to the level of an animal. But from that point, that day, he did his best to take care of the patients. One evening, he was approached by someone who knew how to escape from camp and invited Frankel to go with him. But after just completing his round of visiting patients, he said, "I cannot go. I cannot go." And instantly, he felt a level of unhappiness leave him, and he felt inward peace that he had never felt before. Finally, all the prisoners could hear the battlefront of war coming closer to camp, and the capos tried to evacuate everyone, and they planned to set the camp on fire. After 3 years of imprisonment, Frankel and his friend decided, this might be the time to escape. There was so much confusion. But they didn't get far before the camp gate opened up and a Red Cross truck rolled in, full of medicine, food, and so much more. But the Red Cross could not let the prisoners free, because they had signed an agreement with Hitler's SS. They would move the prisoners to Switzerland within 48 hours to be exchanged for other prisoners of war. But for unknown reasons, Frankel and his friend were not moved out of camp, and later they learned that all of the others who were moved, unfortunately, did not have a happy ending. From his experience in the camp, Dr. Frankel developed a theory he called logotherapy. Logos is a Greek word that denotes meaning. Unlike psychoanalysis, logotherapy focuses on the meaning to be fulfilled by the patient in his future. It's where the patient is confronted with and reoriented towards the meaning of his life. It considers man as a being whose main concern consists in fulfilling a meaning, in actualizing their values, rather than it's all about me gratification. He believed there is nothing in the world as effective to help one survive the worst conditions as there is the meaning of one's life. Friedrich Nietzsche said, "He who has a why to live can bear almost any how." And Dr. Frankel believed that mental health is based on a certain degree of tension, the tension between what one has already achieved and what one ought to accomplish. What matters most is not the meaning of life in general, but rather the specific meaning of a person's life at every given moment. Finding meaning in our life comes in 3 ways. First, by doing something, by doing a deed. Second, by experiencing a value. And 3, by suffering. The second is experiencing something as our work or culture or love. But the 3rd way of finding meaning is in suffering. Suffering ceases to be once the person finds meaning, such as the meaning of a sacrifice, the meaning of why we're suffering. Every moment of suffering has a meaning. Can we see through it and let it take us to a higher place of understanding life? There's so much more in these 2 books, so I hope I've given you a desire to read them both and apply the good news about finding balance and peace in your life. Use it for good in your life and the lives of everyone you love and those you don't love. Use it for their good anyway. It's another small step in bringing peace to the world. I encourage you to begin today. The music for this show is from an acoustical guitar CD by the Leaming Shepherds called Symphony for the Senses. And it even comes with a full brochure about the adventures in their life. Thank you. take.